Welcome to the Women's Bible Study Podcast, a ministry of Sheridan House. If you've missed any part of this series, you can find it and many others online at SheridanHouse.org. We hope you enjoy today's lesson.
We are on Matthew 6, verses 19 through 24, and I think you have already been in there talking about it in your groups. And what an amazingly important lesson that we're going to be talking about, isn't it? We're going to be talking about how these last weeks about how Jesus wants to change our heart attitude. And when he changes our heart attitude, then it will make a difference in our actions and how we respond in life situations to the people around us and difficulties and in blessing times and whatever it is, that as we change our hearts, then it will change our actions. And he is going to discuss that today. He's going to be talking to us about what is temporary treasure. I read about a woman that lived in West Palm Beach. And she died of malnutrition, weighing under 60 pounds. And as they went into her home, she had gone to her neighbors for food, knocked on the door, hey, do you have any leftovers from dinner tonight? You know, I really need some food. And they would help her the best they could. And if she needed something new to wear, she'd go to the Salvation Army and pick out an outfit and that kind of thing. And so then when she passed away alone, no family around, the authorities went into her apartment and in this apartment complex, and they said, we have never seen such a disaster in all our lives. It was just a mess. And they were digging through it and trying to figure out how to dispense with all these things that were in her apartment, and they came across two keys. And they discovered that the two keys were to safety deposit boxes. So they went to the first bank, and they opened up the safety deposit bank. And in there were stock certificates. There were bonds, financial securities, and all those things, and $200,000. They went to the next bank and opened the next
safety deposit box.
Thank you. And Ellie, come on, wake up, please. Anyway, but I'll take it, Sylvia. Anyway, safety deposit box. And they opened that one, and $600,000. She was a multi-millionaire. And yet, she died of malnutrition, because guess what? Money is not our answer. Money is not our answer. She was hoarding millions, and it was totally useless in her life. Our consumer society is constantly telling us that life is, at its best, consists of having more and more and more. More and more possessions and pleasures. And as Christians, we know how false that is, don't we? We know that they are such temporary fulfillment in our life. And so, but the tug is so strong that many of us try that balancing act between what the Bible teaches and what ads say, what our culture says to us. Oh, you need to have this to be happy. You need to go here to be happy. And all those kinds of things that we hear all the time. And so we struggle with that sometimes, I think, between the spiritual riches that God offers in Jesus Christ and the worldly treasures that cannot feed our soul. They cannot feed our soul. We know better in our heads, but we can so easily get caught up in the perspective of our world. We think that materialism and godliness can coexist. You know, I can handle that. I can handle this, and we tend to think that they can coexist. Not only do we think they can coexist, in some Christian circles, it is taught that things, quote unquote, are a sign of God's blessing. I don't know if you've heard that floating around there. So, Jesus' teaching is very relevant to where we are today. A on your outline, what is the nature of things? Jesus starts with a negative command in verse 19, chapter 6, verse 19. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy, where thieves break in and steal. He's speaking in terms that would have been highly relevant at that time because of what their culture was like when Jesus was speaking these words. He was addressing the futility of thinking that we can somehow amass wealth and keep it safe. And so what he's saying is he's using three examples, three types of materials to illustrate the nature of things. Clothing is one, food is another, and gems or precious metals are the other ones. Garments at that time, clothing, was considered to be a part of one's wealth. They understood that their clothing was something that was very important to them, and so it was considered part of their wealth. And Jesus reminds his hearers that all garments succumb to moths. Now, I don't know if we still do this because we live in South Florida, but maybe those of you who live up north, Karen, would verify that. And I remember in the day when I was living in the Midwest that, at the end of the winter season, you would take your clothes and you would put them in a trunk or something, right? And then what would you add?
Moth.
You all remember this. Wow. So the idea is, those moths are going to eat up your clothing. Or I don't know if you've experienced this where you, for us, not mothballs so much, maybe moths eating our clothing. But how about you've taken an outfit to the cleaners and you go to pick it up and it's like three sizes smaller? Have you ever had that happen? Yeah. Or if you're like me, you have coffee stains on every garment you own. So that's the first one, clothing. Then the word rust actually is the closest translation to eating in our understanding. The action of worms eating on food supply, reminding us that no matter how vast the food supply, it ultimately rots or is devoured in some way. And boy, we've really learned that down here in South Florida during hurricane season, haven't we? And I don't know about you, but when hurricane season starts, usually isn't it May? And we go out in the garage and we get out our hurricane supplies. And we take out cans and say, oh, goodness sake, woo, 2 years ago, should have thrown it away. Here's another one. Oh, my goodness, this was 3 years ago. And we know even canned goods that are supposed to, sustain us during a hurricane can go bad. That's the point that Jesus is making here, reminding us that it ultimately rots. Finally, one's gold and silver and gems were never safe from thieves then or now. Now, I bet every one of us knows perhaps a wealthy family or something in your circle of friends or relatives that might have had tremendous financial resources and lost indestructible fortune. We knew of some people in another city who were like that. They had such a vast fortune. They had a yacht, and they had planes at their disposal. And then all of a sudden, one business move, they lost everything. Everything. Wow. That is what Jesus is trying to say. B, the negative accumulation of things. The bottom line, Jesus is saying that the accumulation of wealth was and is a very precarious pursuit. That is a surface look at Jesus' words, but what is underneath what he is saying? Number one, is wealth wrong? Is the question we want to ask him. Is wealth wrong? Was he condemning all wealth? Let me hasten to say, no. The Bible nowhere contains a command, do not own things. In fact, 1 Timothy 4:4, we are instructed to enjoy the good things that God has given us. Verse 4, for everything God created by God is good, and nothing is to be rejected if it is received with thanksgiving. Received with thanksgiving. So then what is Jesus saying? What is he saying about that? Number two, when is wealth wrong? He's not saying that wealth is wrong, but when is it wrong? When it becomes a selfish, accumulation of goods. A selfish accumulation of goods. In Luke 12:15, he puts it this way, very strong words. He said, "Take care, be on your guard against all covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions." That's not what our life is supposed to consist of, Jesus is saying. I think that's pretty point blank, don't you? Wow. How guarded, especially, don't you think, as women, we need to be? Wow. All the must-haves that we must have, all the knickknacks and collections that we have. What is enough? What is enough is what we need to ask ourselves. How many new outfits are enough? And isn't it amazing how advertisers show us new things that we need, quote unquote, every week? Now, I don't know if you've noticed this, but if you scroll down through Facebook or Instagram, and if you stop for a moment on a certain ad, what happens? The next day, week, month, year, whatever, not just one ad, but tons of those ads. They know where to come to get to us, don't they? Wow. Especially at holiday time. Have you ever noticed that? While there are things that the advertisers make us think we can't possibly live without, contraptions to help you open a difficult jar. Wow, I really need that. Or how about this? A recliner that massages your arms, your legs, your backs, your, wow, how amazing. And we feel like, or a new style of jewelry. And we feel like, how can I possibly live without that? I'm so glad that came out right at Christmas time, because then I can ask for that. And so we have that mentality, and we kind of feel like, you know, I can't live unless I have that thing. Now, I'm embarrassed to tell you how many times I've stopped scrolling through Instagram and seen something that I have to have, and I think, why, I wonder if Amazon carries that. You know, here it is, $19.99, a foot massager. Wow, I bet if it's $19.99, goodness sake, I bet I could get it on Amazon for $15. And how often we get caught up in this. This is a warning, not just for the wealthy. When Jesus says, do not lay up for yourselves treasures, here's an interesting fact. The Greek, the original a word for treasures here, is an inclusive term. It certainly means money. However, Jesus was referring to anything that belongs to this world that somebody derives their entire satisfaction from. Is there something in your life that, wow, I don't know if I could live without that? Wow. What Jesus is saying is, three, is there anything that is everything? Is there anything that is everything? Is there anything that is everything to you? Then it is an earthly treasure. When we become fixated on something or anything, something even seemingly harmless, it's not unique to the rich. It's when anything becomes everything, a position, an activity, or a pursuit, or whatever it is, when that becomes an everything, then it becomes something that we need to be careful of. Wow. Jesus' point is, you cannot take any of it with you. Isn't that the truth? We cannot take any of it with us. In fact, the Bible says that in black and white. Job 1:21 says, "Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I will depart." Wow. So, what is lasting treasure? That was the negative to the attention getter. This is what you need to think about. And now Jesus presents a positive perspective, and he tells us in verse 20, "But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, where thieves do not break in and steal." Notice that the verse starts with the word "but" or "however." It's a transition word, isn't it? Instead, he's saying, A, how do we put our treasures in heaven? How do we do that? How do we take our earthly desires and things that we consume us sometimes, and how do we change it to being something that is a treasure in heaven? How do we do that? Jesus is saying that believers will positively be rewarded in heaven according to the way they live their lives here. Now, what that reward is going to be someday, we aren't really instructed by Scripture, but we know it's going to be beyond our wildest dreams. I think that's why God didn't describe it in the Word, in the Bible. I think he didn't describe it because there are no human words to describe the magnitude of what Jesus has for us when he's going to reward us in heaven. Don't you think? That we can't even form the words. If God described it in the book of Revelation or something, we wouldn't say, I get that. No, we wouldn't understand it because it is so profound and so much bigger than our minds could ever take in or comprehend. Wow. The thing Jesus wants to emphasize is that treasure in heaven will be eternal. Isn't that wonderful news? Eternal. Nothing will destroy it. Not moth, nor rust, nor thieves. Nothing will destroy that. You know, we'll pick up our cans and they won't be outdated. Nothing will be destroyed. Last fall, I don't know why I'm telling you this story, but I'm going to tell you anyway, but last fall, Tuesday night, I was getting ready to come up here to teach the Tuesday night class, and I was in the kitchen, and all of a sudden, my favorite shoes disintegrated. I mean, I'm not talking about the heel separating, disintegrated, and they were leather. And I'm like, what in the, how, I couldn't even, I'd have to walk up to the podium barefoot. What in the world? And they were my favorite ones. And Linda Fuller, bless her heart, jumped in her car and went and picked up a pair of shoes from her closet, which was wonderful. And, but wow, I mean, I thought, my life is over. My favorite shoes, you know, oh my goodness, wow. What we get caught up in. The thing Jesus wants to emphasize is that treasure in heaven will be eternal. Will be eternal. Nothing will destroy it. Nothing will destroy it. B, how should we live? Then how should we live? Are we making the right investments now in our lives? Are we exchanging the temporal for the eternal? The question to ask ourselves is, will our present pursuits be important 100 million trillion years from now? What matters? What matters for eternity? Because when we get to heaven, we're going to be there for quite a while. Wow. Million, trillion, however. How important is that foot massager or the recliner or our wardrobe, our promotion, or whatever it is that is so close to your heart that's so hard to pull away from? Wow. Listen to 1 Timothy 6, 17 through 19 in the NIV version. Command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. In this way, they can lay up treasures for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so that they may take hold of life that is truly life. Wow. Bottom line, see, where is your heart? Where is your heart? Jesus gives us a statement to hang our lives on. Verse 21, for where your heart is, there your heart, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Let me say that again. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Now, in order to get the full impact of what Jesus is saying, we need to understand what he meant by heart. What he meant by heart. Number one, the heart is our inner being, our total personhood, our total being. Generally, when we say in English, we talk about the heart, it usually means our affections or what we love or what's special to us and that kind of thing. But the Bible uses it for the whole inner man, every part of us, the core of our total being, the wellspring of all that we do. So Jesus is saying that where your treasure is, there will be your whole being. Wow, that's huge, isn't it? Every aspect of who we are will depend on where our treasure is. Number two, what is the mirror to truly see our heart? It's in this verse, verse 21 again, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be. There your heart will be. It's natural and right that our homes, our education, even vacations occupy much of our thoughts, but Jesus is warning us against total absorption with them. And here's some questions to ask ourselves to help us clarify, what really is my treasure? What are some questions? What occupies our thoughts when we have nothing else to do? What are we thinking about? What do we fret about most? What do we fret about most? What do we dread losing the most, apart from loved ones, of course, but what do we dread the most? What are the things that we measure others by? Wow. What is it that we know we cannot be happy without? My happiness depends on, what is that? What are those items in our life that are so wrapped up in what we consider our happiness? Where is your heart? Is it consumed with the things of this life that will soon pass away and become moth-eaten, rusty, or hauled away, or thrown away? Or is your heart on heavenly treasure? As believers, we're to enjoy life fully, for sure, and authentically, but not to hold too tightly to what we have in this world. Martin Lloyd-Jones, great writer, theologian, said this, "I do not cling to these things. They do not become the center of my life and existence. I do not live for them or dwell upon them constantly. I hold them loosely. I'm not governed by them. Rather, do I govern them? And as I do this, I am steadily securing and safely laying up for myself treasures in heaven." He's saying that for us to kind of get a grip of what we need to be focusing on, what is important, where are my thoughts, and where what governs me, and so forth, as he's saying. How do we develop that heavenly viewpoint? To help us to understand this point, Jesus gives us two metaphors, vision and choosing a master. Vision and choosing a master. First, next on your outline, how do we develop a spiritual vision? Look at verses 22 and 23 with me. The eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? The idea is simple, but really, really beautiful and applicable in our lives. Number A, the eye is pictured as the window. The eye is pictured as a window through which light comes into the body. Now, you know what I'm talking about. I want you to picture the largest window in your house. And if it's clean and, you know, no streaks or dirt or whatever, pollen or whatever is on the thing, what happens? You can see very clearly, and it can really almost light up the whole room, can't it, during the daylight? After daylight savings time is, anyway. but if it's freshly cleaned, the light comes in and will properly light everything in the room. But what about if the window's dirty? The light is hindered, isn't it? It can kind of cloud it out a little bit, and we can't see as clearly out the window as if it's totally clean. Jesus is saying, so it is with the eye. The light that comes into the soul depends on the spiritual condition of the eye. Spiritual condition of the eye. B, how does the eye, quote unquote, affect our attitudes? There are two ways that we can look at the world. Look at the world. One, the eye of the spiritual man. The eye of the spiritual man, the good eye, sees things as they truly are, clearly through God's worldview. When the eye is pure, we can see clearly. But number two, the eye of the non-spiritual man, the bad eye, quote unquote, sees things clouded, distorted, blurred. Remember that Jesus was talking about earthly and heavenly treasures. That is the context in which he is saying what he's saying. Think about how a love of earthly treasure affects every aspect of life. Clouds or distorts attitudes. The other way that love of earthly treasures distorts attitude is in a lack of a generous spirit. Lack of a generous spirit. We want to hoard everything to us because we need to cling on to these things. It gives me security. It gives me joy, we think, happiness, or whatever. And now I know that I am preaching to the choir because you all are generous women. I know personally from 5K races and everything else. So I'm preaching to the choir here. But you know people like this that are generous to themselves, but stingy to others. Do you know people like that? Wow. But there's a bright side. If our eyes are good, generous and not grasping the things of this world, it will produce a life open to the things of God. We can receive the light into our lives and radiate those around us. We just need to get the Windex out. I was going to bring it, and I didn't. Wow. And clean the window of our eyes. Clean it. Make sure that we are putting aside anything that would cloud or distort our vision. Wow. We have, you know, Bob and I love to tell the Sheridan House generosity stories, but we have such a privilege of being in this place to watch all the generosity that comes in. It's just so fun. So I'm going to have to tell you some more. Years ago, we had a man who desperately wanted to make a donation to Sheridan House. So he had a Harley Davidson, sold it, and gave the money to Sheridan House. Isn't that something? The generosity, even in the last few weeks with the 5K, unbelievable. We have a roofer that lives locally that says, anytime you build a building, I'm putting up the roof. And they put the roof on. We have a cement company that has made all the foundations of every single mom triplex, duplex in our village, in the children's homes, put that cement foundation on. And on it goes. Wow, generous, generous, generous. Which leads us to another question, Jesus' second illustration, next on your outline. What master do we serve? Now, I've described to you people that have been so generous to this ministry and to their churches and all over, their personal friends and so forth. And they certainly, we know what master they serve. But let's see what Jesus says. Verse 24, no one can serve two masters. For either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. Jesus says, you cannot serve God and money. A, earthly treasures are powerful. Not only does the love of earthly treasures affect the inner being, number one, it affects our will. It affects our will. When we use the word serve, notice that Jesus says serve God or serve money. We are in the realm of the will, and the will is in the realm of action. In other words, when we begin to think and treasure something, then it will turn into action. And when we think, what we think determines where our treasure is, our heart. In other words, number two, they grip our entire personality. They grip our entire personality. Earthly treasures are so powerful that they can grip every part of us, and it's frightening. But don't we know people like that? Don't we know people like that? Which that is their motivation for living, is what they desire. Treasures, whatever that treasure is. The end of the verse says it perfectly. Jesus is saying we cannot love both masters, money and God. We have to choose. Which is it going to be? B, God wants our all. God wants our all. Worldly things demand our entire devotion. So does God. There's a passage in the Old Testament. It's called the Shema, the Great Shema, in Deuteronomy 6:5, and it says, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and all your strength." Material things, but several years ago, I found this bracelet, and it is the Shema, and it's in Hebrew, and it's in English as well. And I wear it every single day. I never take it off. And because it's such a good reminder of, what am I serving? Am I loving the Lord with all my heart? I'll never forget, one of my granddaughters said to me, "Mammy, do you take that off for bath time?" And I said, "No, don't take it off for bath time." But anyway, a reminder to love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul. And here's the interesting thing. It's not because God is so demanding and saying, "Love me above all else." No, it's not that he's being demanding. He knows what's the best for us. So he is asking us to make him be our treasure for our sake. He knows how to be healthy. What is the best for us? And so how prone we are to kind of compromise that, aren't we? To walk that fence. There is nothing more insulting to God than to say we are serving him, but in reality, when our lives reveal that we're truly serving our desires and earthly treasures like money. When we consider what Abba did for us, when he left the throne of glory and Jesus came to earth, became a man. In fact, I read in my devos this morning that whole time when Jesus was in Gethsemane before he went to the cross, and how he agonized before the Father. And I thought, Jesus, you agonized for me. You sweat drops of blood because you so wanted me in heaven with you. Wow. How could I not treasure you more than the passing foot massagers of the world? Wow. There's nothing more insulting to God than to say we're serving him when in reality we are pursuing our desires and personal treasures. Wow. Closing question. We honestly need to analyze what is truly the most important things in our lives. Is it earthly things like money, status, things of the earth that we can never take with us to eternity? In the 1800s, there was a woman by the name of Lottie Moon. I don't know if that's familiar to some of you, but she lived in the 1800s. She grew up in a very affluent home. She was one of the first women ever to earn a master's in art degree. And there was so much potential in Lottie Moon's life. And guess what she did with that potential? She said, "I'm going to China as a missionary." She left everything, her degree, the monies that she could have had, and she left and went to China. And she became one of the very first women missionaries ever. When she got there, she not only served the Chinese people, but God used her strategically in the churches back in the States to get them interested in supporting missionaries, not just her, but anybody that was serving in foreign countries. In fact, some of you remember in your churches where they used to take a Lottie Moon offering. I think it was at Christmas time, am I right? And that was because God placed on her heart that the churches in the States to get involved in missions and see what was happening in foreign countries as people were trying to come to the Lord. As she was there serving, a famine hit China, and it affected the area that she was in very, very, affected it very much. And she began to share her meager supplies of food and meager supplies of monies and so forth with the people around her. And she lost so much weight, she was under 60 pounds. And so her colleagues and friends around her said, "You need to go home." And they put her on a freighter to send her home. And while she was on that freighter, she got to go home. She got to go to her real home. Now, can you just imagine the glorious celebration when she walked into the heavenly gates, and as the arrival of a woman who laid up her treasures in heaven? Wow, what a moment, what a moment, what a moment. Who or what is the master of who you're serving? Where is your heart? Where is your mind? Where's mine? We need to be considering that. We need to be prayerfully looking deeply, deeply, deeply into our lives.
For previous lessons or other resources, please visit SheridanHouse.org or call us at 954-583-1552. We hope you can join us again next week.